Broadcasting live from the bowels of America's most unique floating haunted attraction. This is the Haunted Majestic Podcast, the only place where you can find interviews with our special guests, updates on plans for the coming haunt season, and details about everything that creeps in the night. Now, let's join our host, Bram Stoker award-winning author, Michael Nost, for another edition of the Haunted Majestic Podcast.
Welcome to the April 15th, 2021 edition of the Haunted Majestic Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Nost. In this podcast, we will visit with Tony Bowen, the haunt director at Haunted Majestic, to get an update about what's new at America's most unique haunt. We'll talk to one of horror's most recognized actors, Michael Berryman, about some of his favorite roles, and we'll visit with Haunted Majestic's owner, Dana Toms, about major projects that are in process at the haunt this off-season. So, sit back and enjoy this episode of the Haunted Majestic Podcast, the official podcast of the Haunted Majestic Haunted Attraction, America's most unique haunt. First up tonight, we welcome Tony Bowen back to the show. Tony is Haunted Majestic's haunt director and has no doubt been really busy in the lab concocting up some new props for the 2021 season. Hey, Tony, tell us what you've been up to since the last season.
Well, it's been pretty busy. We started in the planning phase back in January, and the ball has really been rolling over the past month. We've added a very large addition to the pavilion area this year, which is a large boat known as the Blennerhassett. This was a ferry boat that would transport people to the Blennerhassett Island near Parkersburg, West Virginia, that had sunk to the bottom of the Ohio River, and we've raised it from its watery grave, and we've brought it here to its final resting place here at the Haunted Majestic, which will now house our gift shop, museum, and also where the guest celebrities will be set up. Also, we've been expanding on our haunted trail this year, adding more gruesome scenes. We are changing our theme aboard the Haunted Majestic ship this year. And lastly, we're working on adding the zombie paintball to our haunt. We were hoping to introduce that last season, but we were unable to because of COVID.
So as Haunted Majestic ages another year, I know that the scenery and props are becoming more complex. Where do you get all the ideas that you transform into new scenes and props?
Well, some ideas come from when we have our haunt meeting, our haunt staff. We all collectively throw in our ideas of how we would like, what direction we would like to take the haunt in for its upcoming year. Plus, I do a lot of research on the internet, such as YouTube, Pinterest, and other social media sites. And then a lot just comes from my twisted imagination.
And in just a few weeks, I understand a group from Haunted Majestic that you will be part of is heading out to St. Louis in the Trans World Haunted Attraction Convention to see what's new in the industry. Are you excited to bring home some new ideas from that trip?
Oh, yes. Very excited. Trans World is the largest haunted attraction show of the year. Lots of vendors, lots of professional haunters from all over will be there. So I'm looking forward to meeting them and hopefully bring back a whole plethora of knowledge to using our haunt to make it even better than it already is.
That sounds good. So before I let you go, though, tonight, can you pull the curtain back on anything special that you and your team maybe have planned for this fall?
Well, we've just got a lot of new props that we're adding, a lot of animatronics, new scenes, some great celebrity guest appearances. It's going to be a great haunt season, so everyone out there listening, come out and see us. You won't be disappointed.
All right, Tony, thank you for taking the time to talk with us tonight, and I can't wait to see what you have planned for our visitors when haunt season opens October 1st.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Folks, that was Tony Bowen, the haunt director at Haunted Majestic. Haunted Majestic will open the 2021 haunt season on Friday night, October 1st, and will be open every weekend in October from 7 to 11 p.m. General admission tickets to the haunt, which will include a half-mile haunted trail and a trip through the old World War II hospital barges known as Haunted Majestic, are just $20. Next up tonight, we're going to visit with one of America's most recognized horror actors, Michael Berryman. And you may remember him as Pluto in Wes Craven's 1977 classic, The Hills Have Eyes, and its sequel 8 years later. Michael will be a special guest at Haunted Majestic during the haunt's opening weekend on October 1st and October 2nd. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be on board.
There aren't many actors out there whose big screen and TV careers have spanned nearly 5 decades and have encompassed literally dozens of characters. How have you managed to keep your name on the short list for so many producers and directors over the years?
Well, I would just say that if you do good work, people recognize it and follows that you would be remembered, and they would go, yeah, I'd like to work with him again. I think, you know, I have to give credit to my manager, Judy Potts, and all the people that have repped me over the decades. But I basically believe that doing good work and bringing a character to life creates more work.
And while a lot of people may remember you from The Hills Have Eyes, your television roles on such shows as Star Trek, The X-Files, and even an appearance on a Motley Crue music video also dot your acting career resume. What are some of your favorite roles that you've played over the years?
Great question. I would have to go by category. Comedy-wise, I think Weird Science was right up there. Alf would be another one. And I would also say a comedy would also tie into the Motley Crue videos. I did too. I did Home Sweet Home and Smoking in the Boys Room.
Yeah.
And those were delightful. The crew, everybody, and Nikki and Vince and Nick and Tommy are just true professionals, a lot of fun, a lot of good energy, very positive, and they made me feel at home, because when I first worked with them, it was like I was thinking, I've been around the block. I mean, you know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, saw a lot of bands, and I was not sure at all what to expect. And right away, they were friendly and open and said, hey, come on, hang out with us in the green room. You know, we've got beverages and food and stuff. And so they were not snobby at all. They were really down to earth, good old California boys. And I had an absolute blast. As a matter of fact, we were goofing around, and I did the ear wiggle just for fun during a break. And Nick thought it would be great to put that into the video. And they do. At the end, when they reach through and we do that shock reaction with the ear wiggle, actually, it was very popular on MTV On Demand for quite a while. And eventually, when they aired the video, they did not have an ear wiggle. Well, the viewers were not happy about that. They actually called MTV and filed complaints saying, hey, you know, don't cut short the video. I really want to see the ear wiggle. It's hilarious. Now, I never heard this story until I was doing some voiceover work for a project, for a movie. And the guy who was in the sound lab said, hey, I knew you were coming in. So I made a copy of my day's worksheet the day I had to put your ear wiggle back in. I go, what? And he goes, no, seriously, here it is. And he handed me a copy. I don't have it. I wish I still had it. It's hilarious. And, you know, it has his day's work, do this, do that, you know, one, it's so many minutes and seconds, and here's another title project, do this, do that. And then he highlighted and it said, you know, Motley Crue Smoking in the Boys Room Video, ear wiggle, reinsert 3 seconds. Or it might have been 4 seconds. So it's just fitting that that actually happened with regards to working with Motley Crue. I mean, I think I went to Vegas about 2 years ago. Vince called me up and said, "Hey, I'm opening up a little tiny little restaurant, kind of a bar, and would you like to be there? I'd like to have you there for the grand opening." I mean, it's really just a small little up the side of my living room, but it's fun. And so, bottom line is, they were professional. They're great musicians, great performers, and really good people. Had a blast. So that would be comedy. I would say dramatically, my favorite dramatic role was actually, well, I have a couple. Number one would be the X-Files episode, Revelations. Got to play against Type and Guardian Angel. Had a very special meaning for me. Being able to audition. This is the last time I auditioned. I went to Culver Studios and I can't remember if it was Culver Studios or not, but anyway, I went to the audition, and there was Chris Carter and my director, and I told them, I said, "Look, I want to nail this, and I can do justice to this part to your satisfaction and beyond." And I even told them, I said, "Look, I know about a dozen of the actors that are in the waiting room, and they're all very talented. You can do a good job, but I'm the guy you want." Now, they're kind of going, show me, show me. And I did two quick readings, and they said, "We'll see you in Vancouver, but don't let anybody know you got the part because we want them to audition openly." And I go, "You got it." So, but the role itself was very, very deep and had a lot of personal key points as to why it meant so much to me. I could share with you, or I could share the story with you, or if you bought me a beer, and I could tell you why it meant so much. But it's very big impact as to why that role meant something. Another one would be a part that's actually we never filmed completely, and that was the role of that I had as the Skull Cowboy in the movie The Crow with Brandon Lee. So we had done rehearsals of the three confrontations of the Skull Cowboy and Eric Graven, where I explained the rules of engagement. You know, kill the ones that killed you both. You go beyond that point, you will not be reunited with your beloved. Brandon Lee was a very special person in my life for the short period of time I knew him. And also my friend James O'Barr, who wrote the Crow series. Very special task that he took on for his own situation. And sometimes things get created out of loss. And so there's a lot of emotional content to deal with. But those two roles probably stand out the most as far as dramatic roles.
Now, one role.
And then, of course, the Cuckoo's Nest. It was just a joy to be a part of that.
Yeah, that was what I was getting ready to ask too, because I was going to say that, you know, that's one role that I really admired, your portrayal of a lobotomy patient Ellis, alongside one of my favorite actors, Jack Nicholson, in the 1975 classic One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Now, more than 45 years later, that movie is still as popular right now as it was when it was first released. Tell us a little bit about some of the great actors in that movie and some of your fond memories on that project.
Well, the fond memories were the fact that it was my second job, actually my second day as a working actor. I had a 2-day contract for Doc Savage, The Man of Bronze, which was the opportunity was given to me by the wonderful George Powell, whom I met in Venice Beach, my hometown, way back after I left the university. And he just said, "Hey, I'm making a movie. You have the right look. Would you be interested?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And then he told me who he was. And I go, "Wow, I know who you are. You did War of the Worlds, et cetera." And he said, "Just, you know, say yes." And I did. He got me into the union. I had a card. I made $400 bucks. And figured that'd be the quickest movie career ever. But his casting director was casting for Cuckoo's Nest, so they had a chance to, see what I looked like, and then they figured, well, I had some scars, and, you know, with the skull surgery from this guy, he would be a perfect fit for someone who had received a lobotomy. So I went to a Detroit Culver Studios and met Michael Douglas, Saul Zanstro Douglas, and Milos Forman. And 127 days in Oregon was just a remarkable experience. Everybody became a family, cast and crew, and many of the actors I kept in touch with over many decades. Chris Lloyd was just a bundle of energy, very, very outgoing. Charlie Cheswick was, I'm just a straight up guy. Sid was so happy to be in the movie. His role comes off well, but he was a scene hog. There was one day when he was arguing he wants his cigarettes, and he got called to the carpet because he kept playing beyond the role. With Nurse Ratched in the room, he would not have been so pushy. He was going out of character, and basically he was trying to steal every scene he could. And this went on for months. And Jack Nicholson actually walked off the set at that moment and grabbed a buddy of his and went out to his motorhome to take a break. And this is like about 30 minutes before lunch. And every minute on the production, especially at that level, is very expensive. So if you're missing minutes of downtime, it's costing you. So Jack walked off the set, and he looks over his shoulder, and he says, "Oh, hell, it's just another day, another 10 grand, right, Sid?" Well, I'll tell you straight up, we were making $750 for a six-day week.
Wow.
So that was pretty sobering. And we had a foreign press corps there. Every day there was press from countries all over the world. And it was a major moment. And I go, wow, this is some serious stuff here. And then Michael Douglas and Saul Zantz and the director called Sid into an adjoining room, and all we heard was yelling and screaming and pounding the fists and on the desk. And he kind of behaved when he got back out, but he's still trying to do the same thing. But they got enough good footage where he didn't detract from the film. Louise Fletcher was just one of the sweetest gals ever to work with. As a matter of fact, when she received her Oscar, she signed her acceptance speech so her parents, who are mute, could relate and understand what she was conveying. Which, for the Academy Awards, there in our industry, there's a lot of humanity. There's a lot of wonderful people. And when people, try to bash Hollywood, I don't listen to it, because I know how much the industry is a family, and how you meet some of the best people on the planet. And so I hold her in high regard. I've met people like Paul Newman and Michael Landon. I've worked with both of their charities over time. And so Tidy Up on Cuckoo's Nest, Danny DeVito was just cute as a bug. He was so funny. And we've all aged fairly well. Will Sampson was my neighbor at the hotel. We shared many, many stories of Native American history and lore, which is very much appreciated. The reason he holds his hands under his arms and folded is because he had severe frostbite when Hollywood came out to find the Big Chief. He was actually in the woods with a bunch of pack horses, and one of his horses slipped and fallen, and a blizzard hit. So he went to rescue his horse, and as he was coming out of the woods, a severe blizzard, he got frostbite, and then he looked up the road, the trail, and there was snowmobiles and people wearing Eddie Bauer top of the line gear, and they're all excited about finding the big Indian that would play Jeep Rondon. And Will said, that's not important right now. What's important right now is getting my horse to the vet and get him in the barn. So those are the types of qualities, examples of the quality of caliber of people that we had on Cuckoo's Nest. The final product, of course, speaks for itself. It's all about humanity rising, and that's the most important reason why we have a heartbeat and take a breath, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much you've been able to learn about Haunted Majestic and the history behind the haunt, but it centers on a U.S. Navy World War II floating hospital. And I was really interested to learn that your father was a Navy doctor during the Second World War.
Yes, he was. His name is John Sloan Berryman, and he was a neurologist. He was a neurosurgeon, and he was in the South Pacific, Kwajalein's Marianas, all over that area, attached to a destroyer. And he finished his career with a secret mission, which I won't reveal because it's not a secret anymore. He was requested to go to Hiroshima Ground Zero after they dropped the bomb on a secret mission to see what the effects of nuclear radiation were on the civilians. I have photographs of vaporized images, shadows of what used to be human beings that were infused into solid cement walls.
Wow.
It kind of reminds me of Dresden. You know, they made a movie about that too.
Yeah.
You know, an open city and people were murdered. I'm all for protecting family and friends and nations, but I have I'm not a big fan of war, never have been. That which causes the least harm is the direction I like to go.
Yeah.
Like, just like Pluto having an attitude, I mean, you can only push me so far.
Right.
You know, I will step up to defend us that need assistance. I don't get into that.
Right.
So that's kind of in a nutshell.
Yeah. Hey, with roles spanning the spectrum, such as appearances on the TV series Highway to Heaven and to a zombie and Scooby-Doo animated feature, we all want to know what's coming up next for Michael Berryman. Can you let us in on some of the secrets about what you're working on next?
Well, I can. Some of the things that, because of COVID, a lot of productions have been put on the back burner. But some of the things that have come out that we've done recently that are a lot of fun, a couple of years ago, there's a doctor named Jesse Burke out of Arkansas who makes short films. And the first one was called One Please. It's very popular. I play a creepy ice cream man that comes to suburbia in my truck, and the price of an ice cream is your mother's finger. But it's just done so tastefully, and they're fun. They're just fun, and they're all silent. There's odd happenings in a tiny tent where I play a mime, and there's another one called Cured. Dr. Burke's shorts were a lot of fun to work on. I've done some other little, pop-in for a day or two on other little projects. But the most substantial project is my book. It's called It's All Good. It's my it's a memoir autobiography, and I'm finishing up. It'll be finished this week, probably by the end of the week. And then there's the process, of course, having my manager, get a contract from a publisher. I do have my Facebook page, and then I also have my website, michaelberryman.com. So when the book is available, I will let everybody know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the most significant. It's a story of this young boy, and on the cover, it's me with curly hair before my skull surgery. The reason is because I needed the surgery is because I was born premature with medical issues. It's all out on the internet. But the reason that happened was because my father was at Ground Zero right after they dropped the bomb, or soon thereafter. And then when he came home, of course, he was radiated, and I was born premature with birth defects.
Oh.
So there is a connection, and yes, I do have a personal, agenda, but I have my own personal scientific reasons why I believe we should never have split the atom.
Yeah.
That's not, in my opinion. I'm sure it has other uses, like, you know, for have a satellite run forever, et cetera, but not a big fan of, you know, cross the line and you die. I just believe if two leaders don't like each other and they're going to insist on having grief, the two leaders should be in a cage and we can watch it, have popcorn, have a few beers, and laugh at them.
Now that is something I can get behind right there.
You know, so that's my solution. Because I learned some very important lessons, and one of them was my father one time said, "I've done many autopsies. I've never found the soul. Where do you think it is?" Now, that's an interesting question for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, no doubt. Get you thinking.
Well, yeah, thinking's a good thing. I like thinking, and I like kind of compassion thing. It's important. I'm also, a very strong advocate of Protect, which reminds me of the movie with Eddie Furlong we did in Canada. It's called Below Zero. It's an interesting one. Oh, and then for an odd, this is a great movie you can get on Amazon all day long for $10. It's the only film by Andrew Getty, my good friend, passed away a couple years ago. And the movie is called, it stars me, Sean Patrick Flannery, Dina Myers, and Fred Kohler. It's based on a nightmare. And he graduated from film school at USC. And the movie is called, the original title was A Storyteller, but they changed it to The Evil Within. I like Storyteller better. But if you want to see some incredible panel work and dreamscape scenes, and you should watch The Evil Within. There is an opening scene of a dream sequence where I am like a cadaver, and I bring the nightmares, and I arrive, and then I take a zipper with needles and attach it to the back of Fred's head all the way down his back, and I unzip his body, climb inside of him, and walk out of the room.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and almost everything in that movie is practical, no CGI.
We'll have to check that out. Hey, Michael, we thank you for being with us tonight, and we look forward to your visit with us at Haunted Majestic later this fall. Hopefully, you'll bring along a lot of signed photos from your movie roles and merchandise and for the visitors to purchase.
Yes, I'll bring 8x10, some nice pictures, and I will share some stories. I'm looking forward to it.
Folks, you can meet Michael Berryman at Haunted Majestic this fall. Michael will be a special guest at the haunt on Friday and Saturday night. That's October 1st and 2nd. He will be in the haunt's museum and gift shop from 7 to 11 p.m. each night. Access to all special guests is included in your general admission haunt ticket. We hope you'll stop by and visit with Michael and Haunted Majestic's many other special guests this fall. And finally tonight, we visit the owner of Haunted Majestic, Dana Toms. The off-season for a haunted attraction is long, but never long enough for those behind the scenes who are preparing for the next season. Hey, Dana, welcome to the show tonight.
Hey, thank you for having me on, and boy, is that a true statement. You know, when October is over, you take a deep breath, and you're like, whew, we've got a couple of weeks to get our thoughts together and take a little break, and before you know it, you look up, and it's spring, and we're like, oh my goodness, we're behind. So, definitely a long off season, but not long enough.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, we're almost to the halfway point between last year's haunt and the upcoming 2021 haunt season. Tell everybody about some of the big projects that the staff has been working on since last October.
Well, a couple big things. You know, last year we had several hunts in the western portion of West Virginia, had fire marshal visits from the state, and we had some fire code violations that we had to address. So we've been spending pretty much every waking moment doing that. We are in the process of installing a fire system that has, you know, flashing audible signals and heat and smoke detection and, you know, new exit lighting and things of that nature to get ourselves up to code to where we meet the national standard, which is a good thing that we need to be complying with. And then the second big thing is we have a vision of creating a museum and gift shop up in the pavilion area up on the dry land portion of our haunt to kind of give the visitor a more historical impression of the haunt and some better understanding of the history of the haunt and the significance of it. And, you know, we're real excited about that project. It's going to be really cool.
Now, getting that new museum and gift shop in place was no easy task, I'm sure. Tell us a little bit about that project.
Well, you know, when you think museum and gift shop, you're probably thinking, you know, structure, you know, stick and bricks and things of that nature. And that's not at all what we've got in mind. We've actually floated a 95 foot long double deck sternwheeler boat that was formerly a dinner cruise boat on the river up onto dry land. And we've placed it and kind of built it into a structure itself. So it's going to be really awesome. And it's going to carry that nautical theme that our haunt is all about. And it's going to be something as soon as you pull up and see this thing towering above the haunt, you're going to go, oh, my goodness, what in the world is that? And that's what we want, is we want something that's going to draw people in, and people are going to love to get inside this thing and kind of see what we have to offer them.
And I'm part of the museum and gift shop setup will be a dedicated place for the haunt's special guests where they can meet and greet visitors in a climate-controlled atmosphere. Who are some of the special guests who are planning to make Haunted Majestic part of their fall routine in 2021?
Well, you're right. We are going to use the gift shop and the museum as sort of the central gathering area for our people that come in, people that are our guests. And that's where our special guests are going to be placed, and they're going to have climate control and not have to worry about, you know, when late October comes, you get the rains and you get the cold and you get all the great things that fall brings us. But we've got some great people that we're working on coming in this fall. You just interviewed one a moment ago, Michael Berryman. Michael, we're so excited to have him at our haunt this year. I mean, I've been a fan of him since I was a kid. You know, in Wes Craven's The Hills Have Eyes, you know, he appeared in that movie as Pluto back in the early or mid-70s. And then one of my favorite movies of all time with Jack Nicholson is The One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where, you know, of course, Michael played the role of a lobotomy patient named Ellis, who didn't really have any speaking parts, but, you know, really played a neat role in that movie. And holy cow, I mean, he's been in about everything from Star Trek to The X-Files to Highway to Heaven to, you know, probably a couple dozen horror movies over the years. But he's going to be with us. Some of the others we haven't announced yet. We're kind of going to do those every couple weeks as we get to it, but I'll kind of give you a little sneak peek. Is we're going to have one of the original cast members from the 1960s Addams Family television series is going to be with us for a couple nights. We've also got a little Stephen King flair that we're going to throw in there, and I'll kind of leave it at that. And then we've got one of the actors who played Leatherface in one of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies that's going to be with us for a weekend. So, you know, we're still working on that. It's early yet, but, you know, keep an eye on our website and our Facebook page and stuff in the next couple of months, because, you know, those announcements are coming here every few weeks as we get these people booked.
Now, I know we're going to talk about this more in depth in a future podcast, but tell us a little bit about Haunted Majestic's new book that is coming out this fall.
Well, we're actually very excited. We're going to release our first book this fall. It's called Open Wounds, and it is a historical fiction book that follows the Majestic barges during their service in World War II as a hospital or a floating hospital ship. So it's going to be basically a historical account from the eyes of one of the physicians that worked on the vessel during that time, and talk about some of the horrors that he had to endure as a surgeon during World War II. And we're hoping it's going to be the first of three books that we're going to do. A second one is going to be the early history of the Majestic barges back in the from 1919 until World War II. And then the third one, which is we're finding the Majestic is a very popular place for the paranormal people to come and investigate and want to do sleepovers and things like that. So we've been able to get a lot of that data that these investigators have gotten on the barges over the past couple years. And our third book is going to be a paranormal investigator's guide to the Haunted Majestic. So if you want to come and do an investigation, you can kind of buy the book and see where the hot spots are and see what some of the other investigators have found over the years as they investigated. So, you know, we've got a long way to go to get to that point, but we do have that first book almost finished, and it will be going to press here in the summer. And you're only going to be able to get it at Haunted Majestic. We're not going to sell on Amazon. We're not going to sell online. So you got to come to the gift shop to get a book.
Sounds good. Well, folks, that was Dana Toms, the owner of Haunted Majestic. Well, that brings us to the end of the first Haunted Majestic podcast for 2021, and we will be back with another show on June the 1st, a third on July 15th, and our final show of the 2021 off-season on September 1st. And you can listen to any of our podcasts from this summer or last year's shows anytime on our website at www.hauntedmajestic.com or on the Haunts YouTube page. And you can simply click on the media page on the website and we'll be directed to the podcast shows and YouTube page link. So until we meet again on June 1st, I am your host, Bram Stoker, award-winning author Michael Nost, wishing you a good night. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Haunted Majestic podcast. You can listen anytime or download past episodes from our website at www.hauntedmajestic.com. We hope you join us again for future shows.